How do you get your news, and especially online? How do you keep up? If you're like a lot of people, that answer has changed over the years. For a long time, social media platforms, including Facebook and Twitter, now called X, played a huge role in linking people to news stories. But new data from the website analytics company SimilarWeb shows that top online news sites are seeing drastic decreases in web traffic coming from those social media platforms. In just the last 2.5 years, web traffic referrals from Facebook and Twitter dropped over 75%. That's just the latest shakeup for news outlets trying to attract and retain audiences and keep revenue coming in. Less web traffic has meant more layoffs and closures in the news industry as outlets try to adapt. It also leaves the news consumer to navigate where to get news and how to vet it. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How much have you used social media for news? Has that changed over the years? Do you have, when your online news sites that you go to or aggregator apps or sites that you use to keep up with the news? Let us know. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Patrick Johnson is an assistant professor of journalism and director of student media at Marquette University. Patrick, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, great to be here.
The numbers sound pretty stark. How big a deal is this decline in social media links to news sites?
Well, let's just say it's another one of those wonderful hiccups in journalism's evolution to the digital world. I think what we see is such a significant rise in mis and disinformation in social media spaces that it's forced people to really reckon with what does social media do for them and how exactly has social media created a news ecosystem that's worth trusting. And I think that's a really important question that news consumers need to be asking themselves. To what extent did Facebook content really give them the correct news? And to what extent has now X, after being musked, what is it now doing to promote pro-social media content? I mean, we've seen headlines being taken away in the most recent update of X. And so news organizations are really going to have to figure out what does this mean when for several years they've used social media as a main driver to their websites.
To what extent, when that peak period was there, when social media was a key source of links to news websites, were news outlets writing in some ways for social media to optimize their content so that they would show up on the Facebooks and Twitter and other platforms to get people there in the first place?
100%. And it is laughable. Like, I mean, we saw in the advent of the internet, which when I talk to students about that, they're like, wait, the internet didn't exist. You know, there was these substantial panics around how digital first models were going to impact advertising. Mm-hmm. Well, then we had social media, in which all of a sudden we had another panic of, okay, so how do we get people to our websites using this like miraculous software that is social? And what happened was we saw different ways in which journalism responded. We saw people writing SEO headlines. We saw clickbait style headlines and images and graphics. We started to see almost this interesting return to like yellow journalism kind of practices. And it's kind of gotten away from us. I would say social media has become such a beast, especially in the news industry, that we are definitely in a place where we have to say, what did we do? It's Frankensteinian, so to speak. We've got this monster that we as Frankenstein have created. And now we're trying to say, okay, now what do we do? Like, how do we take this back? Well, it's there. And now, unfortunately, journalism is facing the consequences of not investing in other models and ways. I think there are organizations that are doing this, that are helping to combat some of this reliance on social media. But unless we're willing to buy into some of these organizations who are really doing their due diligence to bring trust back in the news, we're really going to have to like fight to figure out what is attraction to news sites look like now that social media is such a hellscape?
And at a fundamental level, I mean, over the years, we've seen a lot of smaller communities flat out lose their local newspapers if they had one in the first place. We've seen cutbacks at a lot of the big chains, even some of the biggest names in news. We see headlines about layoffs, the newest one, Washington Post, some voluntary buyouts on the way. At all levels, it seems like, Patrick, a lot of media outlets that people used to rely on are struggling. How bad are things?
How bad? How sad do you want me to go with this? You know, I'm a blissful optimist. And the reason I say that is we do also have problems that we need to address. And I think, for example, hedge funds are buying up our newspapers left and right, and they're buying up our television stations, and they're creating significant layoffs in the process. Social media also contributed to those layoffs because we didn't need as many people because, quote unquote, anybody could have been a journalist, which I don't believe or agree with. We also are dealing with the AI revolution, and we're seeing this in the writer's strike, and we are seeing this in the actor's strike. I think journalists also need to push back in their labor unions on the use of AI. We also are seeing news deserts, meaning all of these local publications that are going under because they people don't have the money to pay for the journalism in their communities. And so, yeah, that's sad. That's horrible. I believe news is one of the foundational pieces to how we live and breathe in a functional democratic society. The optimist in me says we always find a way. And again, there are certain organizations like Trusting News, for example, and to be transparent, I do research work for them. So it's not that I'm just, but I'm not just using them for that purpose, where they're looking to get into newsrooms and they're looking to do training and development opportunities, especially down at the level of local press, to get people to come back to the news and to find ways for community members to find trust in the news, to subscribe again, to be able to get returning customers. The thing that we're seeing the most right now across the country is this pushback on what journalism stands for. And so it's not even just the economic, it's not even just trust. It's this heightened sense of political concern in that conservative readers, for the most part around the country, are retreating from the news. We're finding that they don't appreciate certain elements of diversity in publications, and that journalism is seen as a liberal cause. On the flip side, we're seeing people from marginalized communities like Black and Brown communities, the LGBTQ community, who are also pushing back on journalism for not telling their stories appropriately, and for creating a historical harm. And so because we have all of these things pushing back on us as an industry, it's going to push us into a corner. And sometimes the best way to find a solution is to move from the corner. Now, if I have the answer, I would have a lot of money. but I do think we can get there. I do think that there's ways in which we can work collectively, both as, I think, as academics and as news professionals, specifically in our classroom spaces. I think right now the answer is in one of our classrooms. And we have to tap that. We have to find that.
We're talking to Marquette University journalism professor Patrick Johnson about a decline in social media links to news outlets and what it means for news organizations and the ways we consume news. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Want to hear about the practicalities of when you are on a computer or your phone or your tablet or whatever. How do you seek out news? Do you click through on social media links of one sort or another? Do you open an Apple News or Google News app or website and find links to lots of outlets? Or do you go to the Metropolis Times or whatever news outlet you go to, maybe a non-fictional one, for example? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with Patrick Johnson, Assistant Professor of Journalism, Director of Student Media at Marquette University. He's with us today to look at the impact that declining social media traffic is having on news outlets and the way we get our news. You can let us know how you get news online on your phone or other device at 800-642-1234. Is social media a source of links to news items for you? The younger generation, according to some stats, TikTok, a rising force in how you connect to news. Is that you? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jim is with us in Slinger. Jim, hi.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What's your news consumption habit, Jim?
My consumption habits are anything that has to do with Fox News or CNN or MSNBC. I generally just have a question and I'll go on to Google or DuckDuckGo and I'll look for headlines that I see that the answers may lie in. Like maybe Al Jazeera, that's pretty unbiased in my opinion. I found myself looking a lot now on Twitter. I find a wide variety, or X, I found a lot of wide variety of opinions and just comments. The comments are the most useful to me. I hate the opinions that usually come from a writer. The bias out there is terrible. Liberal bias is out of control and it's obvious. And I just don't go for it. I'll never click on a link. I'll never even give them a click, knowing, you know, what news organization is. I just won't do it. If it's a liberal bias, I'm not buying it.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Patrick is seeking out news from a variety of sources, but he's skeptical about some of the headlines he'll come across.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty common. I mean, I think one, that's a prime example of like how people can be news literate, being able to understand the difference between a news piece and an opinion piece. And I think in agreement with Jim, there's a lot that's out there that isn't news, that is opinion. And we have to be able to help one another learn the difference between the two. I think it's also important to make sure that we are recognizing that a lot of these, the combinations of places like Google, DuckDuckGo, X, Facebook, et cetera, all have algorithms that are reading all of the other data that we have on our phones and our computers. And so the more we spend on certain sites that aren't even news sites, the more those things are being filtered through these algorithms, which are then spitting out this content to us. And so that also changes our news consumption habits, because those algorithms, especially through social media platforms, are giving people the news that they think, or that the algorithm thinks, they are more likely to believe. And I think that's also a part of what we need to be better at thinking about, that these algorithms are far more dangerous, I think, than sometimes we give them credit.
Jim, thanks for the call at 800-642-1234. Patrick, you said earlier you're optimistic that there can be models for news production. Let's talk first of all about what we might think about, maybe a mid-sized newspaper in a mid-sized city. It has a website too, of course. Do you see a model by which they can start to build that audience and do what we used to expect as a watchdog from that newspaper?
Yeah, I think when we talk about new models of journalism or where journalism can go, I think community engagement is one of the core tenets to that. One of the things that I think especially national journalism has kind of complicated for us is that because we've lost local papers, people only see perspectives from the national press, which oftentimes are complicated by people having the name, an analyst title versus a correspondent title versus an anchor title. And so when you look at a mid-sized newspaper, for example, like I'm down the street from the Journal Sentinel, the more we're able to get newspapers and the journalists back within our communities, generating these opportunities for trust building to exist, whether that means hosting town halls or the journalist one day a week sitting in a coffee shop and having essentially like office hours where community members can come sit and have conversations about what they want to see and read in their publication, but also what are they critical of? What, you know, if people are upset about liberal bias and opinion pieces, publications need to be more willing to hear that and to understand where that's coming from and what does that mean? And what does that mean for a subscriber? Are people not subscribing because of that? Well, research says, yeah, they're not. They're turning away from our publications. So to me, a new model has community engagement as the core, with transparency and care closely tied to them.
Let's go back to our callers. Kimani is with us in the Green Bay area. Kimani, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I think it's two-pronged. The first part of my comment is why I think there have been less links on social media. I think the first one that's kind of obvious is that for a while there were a series of bots that were doing the work. But the second cultural piece of that is after what we had experienced with the 2016, with the elections in 2016 and 2020, I think we lost a lot of friends on social media. So now the social media posts are more back about the family and just the positive things that are going on in our lives. And then the second part of the comment is where we get our news from. My wife and I, we use, if we want news, we will go to either France 24, BBC, and crazily, Al Jazeera. I'm actually surprised at how straightforward Al Jazeera was. But so those are my comments.
Hey, Kimani, before I let you go, though, like if you want to read the BBC, you just go to, you know, BBC.com or whatever. You don't search and maybe come across articles. You start with the news platform itself.
Well, I was just talking about where we get our video news from,
gotcha.
Like what we stream now. But as for what I read, I use an app called Flipboard. And in that app, it's got a really cool user interface where I put what, you know, my interests are, and it turns it into a magazine daily. And,
gotcha.
So Kimani, that's where I read. So
thanks a lot for sharing that. Patrick, that brings up something that disappeared that I thought was kind of cool for a while, RSS feeds online, where you could set up that subscription, basically, where you see stuff popping up on different websites.
Yeah, I think we are going to see a return of that a little bit in newer models. And I think where we're going to see that is actually through newsletters, which is like another variation of RSS feeds in some respects. Because to me, those newsletters allow for a different kind of personality to exist, but it also allows for more strategic engagement, meaning people are actually getting to directly sign up for something and get a glimpse of the news that they feel they can use, which hopefully then builds them towards wanting to subscribe. But places like Flipboard, apps like Flipboard are a really great example of that. Apple News does similarly, where you're able to curate in different ways. But yeah, I think RSS feeds, I remember many of them. But I think newsletters are that new wave that might actually be really good opportunities for social engagement.
Kimani, thanks for the call. Kimani also mentioned seeing Facebook return to more, you know, what people you know are doing, which I think I've noticed too. That's all I ever wanted from Facebook, Patrick. Like, how did it rise to become for a while there such a key factor in spreading news?
Well, which answer do you really want out of that one? So I actually am no longer a Facebook user, but I do think one of the things that did occur, and Kimani points out the elections as being a core tenet of this, I think it's more 2020 even than 2016. 2016 certainly had plenty of commentary associated, but I think what we saw was this really interesting tribalism and this almost permission to be able to post things that were more hyper-political and less fact-checked. And so what we thought oftentimes was news sometimes really wasn't. It masqueraded as such. And so we did see a lot of mis and disinformation spread through Facebook in particular, which Meta acknowledges and has acknowledged in several congressional hearings that they amplified a lot of that mis and disinformation, especially around the campaigns of 2016 and 2020, because it meant more user engagement, even if that engagement was detrimental. And it's true. I think it drastically impacted people's relationships with one another. And it did so in like real nasty ways. Mm-hmm. And I think people are ready to be like, wait, where's the sun again? Can we find something a little happier to attach to, a more uniqueness to one another? I think is definitely something that we're striving to come back to.
Just a minute or so left, Patrick. I asked you about a model for commercial outlets to kind of rebuild in this new, maybe post-social media linking to news era. How about nonprofit alternatives? There are a bunch of different examples out there. Any of them that strike you as particularly promising?
The 19th. And I think nonprofits are in many respects a significant part of the future of our industry. In part because they're able to target niche audiences, and they're cultivating content around certain ideologies and certain ideas that are really important. The other one I think everyone should check out, and I hope more cities take on this model, is Resolve Philly, which is a organization in Philadelphia that is really looking to reframe community-centered news. And so if any listeners listening, I think places like Milwaukee, for example, need their own version of Resolve Philly.
Patrick, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Yes, have a great day.
That's Patrick Johnson, assistant professor of journalism and director of student media at Marquette University. He's with us today to talk about the impact of declining social media traffic toward news outlets and how we get our news online and what the future might hold for journalism and people who read it.